If the physical, negative vortex, surrounded by the aura, reaches a balance between what we term spirit and the physical, that person can climb a hill without effort because it is not required that he push the inert matter upward in defiance of the laws of gravity. The human vortices also start and end at the surface of the ground. In man, balance is achieved above the earth's surface. The negative vortex has its apex downward, at the feet. The positive vortex of the real body has its apex upward, above the head. When the balance between the physical reflection and the real body, or the consciousness of your being, reaches a state of equilibrium, these vortices will be of the same length, the same diameter, and the same speed of rotation. You can levitate yourself with the forces established at a zero point between these two opposing polarities. Through these vortices, and with them you can establish a field of protection around you. Not necessarily by willful direction but by the actions you manifest. If your thought is good, your actions are of a giving nature. If you are concerned with the welfare of others, you automatically establish a field of protection around you because the universal mind compensates directly, and equally, for every thought and action. The zero balance between the physical vortex and the vortex of the real, conscious, everlasting you, is difficult to hold. You may be unbalanced slightly in one direction or the other, in one belief or the other, in the manifested actions you perform. The purpose in your being on the surface of the planet is to bring about a balance, first, in your own control, and next, a balance between each of you, an understanding, a compassion, a love that is not expressed in words. This balance cannot be maintained mechanically, for you don't know which vortex to increase or decrease. But by following the basic principle of the golden rule, by doing all things in moderation, you will arrive at a point of equilibrium where you will be able to know which side of zero you must bring up or down. When you reach a state of zero polarity between your individual vortices, you are at one with the infinite mind. You can know anything, you can see anything, and you can be anything of your own choice, so long as you maintain that balance. If you associate closely with people, these vortices can leak, thereby causing you to acquire disease or character conditions of ones you associate with. This is also responsible for what we call love. Not the real love, but the physical attraction of one for another, oftentimes of one sex for the same sex. If one has a predominantly negative, physical vortex and another has a predominantly spiritual vortex, these two vortices are attracted to each other. This is not the condition of love. It is a condition of mutual attraction by two people, who may seem to be entirely opposite in every other aspect. Someone at a distance from you cannot affect you, but in close association you will assimilate characteristics of another person. These are natural things, because nature wants to balance everything. The spiritual person is attracted to the predominant materialist, and vice versa. The leakage of vortices is something you should watch for. You can assimilate character, understanding, and love by association with people who demonstrate these characteristics. Therefore, you should try to associate with these types of people. The vortex of the human physical body will also cause people to be repelled. Oftentimes you will meet one whom you immediately dislike intensely. This is not a condition of knowing the other person, it is a natural condition of polarities repelling each other. These things are beyond the scale of records, as far as individuals go. It is not possible to compute, and understand, the vortices of all individuals. Individually, however, you can try to understand your own, and the effects of the vortices of other people upon you. But remember, one can be close to you and discharge your vortex by an opposite charge, thereby causing you to feel physically tired and drained of life. Study your friends at a safe distance, about 6 feet, before you associate closer, or you may discover what you term an enemy in the friendship you thought was yours. O man, my light is not for the victor, nor for the one who falls in defeat, my light is to the one who gains understanding of my ways. My arms are not extended either to the right or the left, but are centered to balance the living individual parts of my being. Though forces may oppose your every move, my strength lies in the power to meet the opposition. Though evil may tempt you, my light is brightest when the evil is overcome. For evil is not of my creation, O man. Evil is brought about by those who falter on the way to me. Never, never in all my eternity shall man control the paths to me. The paths are my ways, and man can only travel on my paths. In all my doings I have brought about a pattern of progression. None can turn about my works, none can interrupt my way. Those who follow in the darkness only trip themselves. Stand within the light of me, for I am light of thee, O man, and I can only shine when you have made the way in progress of my doing. Lean not upon another, only accept thy brother as one to help, one to assist along the way, that unity in numbers may bring about progress in my infinite light. Fear not, fear not. There is no fear within my being of you. Fear is only added by the things you do that are not within the pattern of my ways. Reach within, I am there. None can scare you when you find the me in thee. Stand, stand upright. Death is only that which adds to those who have performed the great. Fear no evil, stand within my light. Feel my living light within you. Know that I am the throughout eternity. Chapter 6. The Angels of Space. And the angel that talked with me came again, and waked me, as a man that has wakened out of his sleep. Zechariah 4, 1. This paragraph fits almost exactly the experience that I had on August 24th of 1953. Angels were always considered by me to be some vaporous type of afterlife that just floated about here and there. My entire concept of things changed with the physically manifested appearance of one of these angels to me. From the position of the full moon, I judged it to be around 2 a.m. here on the desert. It is nearly as bright in full moonlight as it is in daylight. I awakened, not knowing why, but sensing that something had happened that had disturbed me. We sleep outside about 6 months out of the year, so you can see that our bedroom was readily accessible. As I looked up from the bed, I saw a man standing about 6 feet away from the foot of the bed. This was not uncommon, as we operate a public airport and have been awakened many times by our dogs barking at people coming in during the night. However, at this time not a sound was heard from the dogs. This I recalled later, and it was certainly unusual. I asked the man what he wanted, thinking his so-car might have given him trouble and he had walked into our remote airfield as many others have done before. At the same time I sat up in bed. Beyond the man, about 100 yards away, hovered a glittering, glowing spaceship, seemingly about 8 feet off the ground. I knew then that he was not having car trouble. The man said, "My name is Sol Gonda. I would be pleased to show you our craft." My left hand and arm were still under the covers. I pinched my wife in the side to awaken her. Sol Gonda smiled, like he knew what I was doing. I pinched her again. She normally awakens very easily. I didn't want her to miss what was taking place. Sol Gonda smiled again. Still no response from my wife, so I pinched her hard. Sol Gonda nearly laughed aloud. My wife didn't wake up, and somehow I realized Sol Gonda had her under some kind of control. I hopped out of bed clad only in undershorts. Sol Gonda preceded me for a few yards and then I caught up with him and walked beside him. Not a word was said as we walked to the ship. In fact, I never said another word to him. From the time I got out of bed, until I returned to it, every time I thought of something to say he was answering me before I could speak the first word of any sentence. This proved to me their perfect ability to communicate by thought transference. As we approached the craft I began to get butterflies in my stomach from about 50 feet away. Coming nearer, my hair seemed to want to stand up on end. This feeling disappeared instantly upon entering the ship. The craft was about 36 feet in diameter and about 19 feet high. It looked like the same type that George Adamski photographed in his close-ups. The interior was about 18 feet in diameter and about 10 feet high. The walls were of some opalescent material like our imitation mother of pearl. There was a shelf around the inside below the portholes, about elbow height from the floor when one was standing. A column extended from the ceiling to the floor in the center of the ship. Three other men were on the craft when we went in. They were all of the same approximate height of Sol Gonda, who was about 5 feet 7 inches tall. These three men smiled but never spoke, and I didn't learn their names. Sol Gonda demonstrated their retractable seats, which formed a lounge when extended out of the walls. He showed me several celestial navigation instruments, and then we went below the main deck through a manhole into the power generating room. Below the deck it was necessary to crouch down on a circular catwalk. There the power mechanism was exposed to view, and I understood the principle of operation, which Sol Gonda apparently picked up by telethought. We left the ship after what I judged to be 20 minutes. Sol Gonda walked back to bed with me, where my wife was peacefully sleeping. When I climbed back in bed I wondered if the strange feeling I had in my stomach was going to affect me in any way. Before I could put the thought into words Sol Gonda said, "No, you'll be all right," and instantly disappeared. About a minute later the ship slipped slowly into the sky and was out of sight in less than a minute. Later we checked the hovering spot with a magnetic compass. The vortex set up by the field from the ship would swing the needle 10 easterly in walking into the vortex center, and 5 westerly in passing out of the center on the opposite side. People who went there a week later to catch their lunch became nauseated and couldn't eat. I know now that angels are people that come out of space. They not only colonize planets and communicate by thought, but they spend their time helping other people to understand life. Right now they are around and on our planet to help humanity out of the mess we have gotten ourselves into. People are people everywhere in the Creator's universe. The only difference is that most of them have followed the universal laws and thereby progressed, while we on Earth have not. You had a body before you came here on Earth and you'll have another one when you leave. But maybe then you'll be called an angel. Genesis tells of God making man, but it doesn't say anything about him making angels. This further proved to me that angels are the race of man. The first mention of an angel in the Bible comes in Genesis 16-7. In this verse, the angel is referred to as an angel of the Lord. The sages of biblical times knew the mysteries and actions of the esoteric laws. Thus it was known to them that everything that was motivated by natural forces traveled in an arc, or curved path. Anything that moved in any other path of motion was unnatural and was symbolically termed an angle. People living in Abram's time therefore referred to anything that was of an unnatural motion from their point of view on the earth's surface, as an angle. These people didn't know anything about weather balloons, modem airplanes, and high-flying jets. The only things they knew of that flew in the sky were winged birds. When they observed a spacecraft, or men come out of the sky, they naturally pictured them with wings, like the birds. Since the appearance of men or ships in the sky was not a naturally happening occurrence, they symbolized the sky visitors as angels. The way these people recorded any happening was to have one of their scribes write it down. Like a newspaper reporter of today who wasn't present at the actual scene, the scribe had to write it as it was described to him by eyewitnesses. Whenever the people wanted a copy of any written record, they found a scribe to copy it for them. The scribes of those days got things twisted as badly as the reporters and newspapers of today do. Due to error in interpreting the symbol, the scribes in copying the accounts of the angels coming out of the skies wrote angel, instead of angle. All copies made from an erroneous one usually repeated the same mistake. So angels became angels. In a number of the experiences describing contacts with the people in the spacecraft, the Earth people making the contacts stated that the space people disappeared before their eyes. As this also occurred to me during my contact, I can understand their amazement. The uninformed would say they dematerialized. The technically minded people would say they went into the fourth dimension. The psychiatrist would say that the people suffered from hallucinations. None of these are true. The reason our space friends can disappear is because our physical vision depends on light reflection off of things in order to see. The wavelength of visible light extends from approximately 4,000 angstroms, extreme violet, to 7,700 angstroms, extreme red. Compared with the known radiation spectrum as a whole, the range of physical vision is extremely limited. This is comparable to looking at the landscape through a crack between two boards, and saying the landscape outside the range of visibility doesn't exist, has dematerialized, or is a hallucination. Our space friends know light inside out and backwards. In order to eliminate the need for weapons which would injure others, they have developed what they call the perfect defense. This is a small object about 2 by 2 inches square and about 1/2 inch thick. It has rounded corners and is generally carried on the cord around the neck and suspended under the blouse. Their ability to read thoughts allows them to be aware of any danger or threat, and all they have to do is tap this device with either hand, and then appear to disappear. The object is actually a crystal battery that stores piezoelectricity that is generated by cutting magnetic lines of force, or the same as static electricity. The nearest thing to this electricity stored by the crystal battery that we know of, we refer to as the spirit body, or aura. The electrical, spirit body of people varies with their environment, and the chemical makeup of their physical body. This is why you feel good when you are with some people, and feel drained, or exhausted, after association with others. Some people have stronger spirit bodies than others. When the scout ship landed here in August of 1953, I observed this object. Solgonda was turning it by the corners between his hands. Suddenly he opened two opposite ends of it and pointed it at the granite rocks of the mountain. I saw a pencil lead-sized stream of light between the object and the mountain. I thought he was shooting something near the mountain. Later he explained that he was charging the device. He said they charge various other pieces of their equipment over granite mountains. This is due to the piezoelectric effect set up by quartz in its granite matrix. When they discharge the crystal battery by pressing on either side of it, it releases the charge into their electric body, or aura, and causes light to bend around them, therefore appearing to disappear to the limited physical vision of anyone who is watching them. They do not dematerialize or go into any other dimension. They are just as solid and physical as always, but they are outside of the limits of physical vision. This same device was used by the man Jesus when he disappeared out of crowds of people, and again when he reappeared unto the people after 3 days. In St. Luke 24:13-21, it tells how two of the people walked down the road talking with him. Verse 31 says, "And their eyes were opened, and they knew him, and he vanished out of their sight." Some teachings would have you believe that this was a vision the people had. Jesus discounted this himself in St. Luke 24:36-39 when he said, "Handle me, and see, for a spirit hath not flesh and bones, as ye see me have. Two women shall be grinding together, the one shall be taken, and the other left. Two men shall be in the field, the one shall be taken, and the other one left." St. Luke 17:35-36. Either you have faith in the prophecy of the Bible, or you must reject the whole book. The Bible is an accurate history of events that repeat themselves in cyclic repetition. The above paragraphs say a division of humankind will be made. One shall be taken and one shall be left. Who is to make the decision? Who will do this judging of humanity to see who will be taken and who will be left? Every day that passes, you, individually, are establishing your right to be taken by the way you live. You are manifesting your choice by your actions and thinking. Each person adds increase to their vibratory body aura by conforming to the laws of the universe. Your aura, or the frequency of the body force field, will determine whether you are taken or left. A definite vibration will be established in the force field surrounding each spacecraft that will pick up people. If your body aura or force field conforms with, or exceeds, the established level of the spacecraft force field, then you can enter the ships. Remember, you are now qualifying or disqualifying yourself to be taken aboard. None can qualify another. Jesus can't save you. Some narrow-minded sects of religious fanatics have established that only 144,000 people will be saved. Of course, they are part of the chosen few. Those who will be taken, and those who will be saved, are two separate conditions. The next thing one asks is, where will the people who are picked up be taken? This is answered in St. Luke 17:37. And they answered and said unto him, Where, Lord? And he said unto them, Wheresoever the body is, thither will the eagles be gathered together. Naturally the eagles gather together in the sky. This was said in a parable at that time, because the people in the biblical days didn't know what it was to fly in the skies. It was not meant for the people of those days. It was said for the people of our time. The space people, angels, explained that the people who have been taken aboard their craft in these times, were not taken aboard because they were better than anyone else. They explained that these people were taken aboard for their own test purposes, to see how different types of people would react. Each one who has been so honored was readily accessible in a remote place. They were of cooperative minds, and each represented a different type of the Earth's people. This mass pickup of people will take place prior to the planet's rebalancing on new poles. This cataclysm will wipe out the destructive mammon lovers who will be left on the surface. After the Earth has restabilized on its new poles, and the continents and oceans have changed, then the people who have been taken up in the air will be landed back on the surface. Watch ye therefore, and pray always, that ye may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man. St. Luke 21:36. O man, in the rings established within the light of me, orbiting my systems I am potency that moves a nebula, that causes suns to shine. Though some upon this portion of myself have devious ways to violate my infinite wisdom, it is not I who judge nor pay the price. As in my cycles, as in my phases, as in my eons, I have established precision in the order of my parts. And though a voice comes through to you unrecognized by mortals, realize, in the voice, I am the potent substance force of life, pulsing through your being, unto eternity. I separate the white from black and color boundaries do I set, for all my creations are of me, from lowest animal to tree, and all that is. I am the unseen force that manifests in everything you do. Impotent substance clay of me cannot interfere, except to bring about conditions that reflect upon the garment that you wear. O man, never shall you find an end to me. There is no place I cannot be and am. You make your hell by deeds you do in violation of my ways. One who says hell is a place in my infinity, is violating me. Reaction is the only hell, rebounding from a spell when you excluded me, O man. Some preach there is a hell for others, never for themselves. Watch out for these, their ego is leading them astray. Through space and time and place, remember I am there and here with you. I have no hell for man of me. Man who believes there is a hell, is reviving imagery of experiences he has had along the road to me. Chapter 7. Prodigal Mother. The levels or strata of substance around the crust of the earth are separated by insulations of the one still light. These layers of insulation are the activating intelligence of the Creator in relation to our planet. Intelligence infiltrates all of the matter in the substance strata. Each alternate matter strata is of opposite polarity and rotates opposite to the matter strata on each side of it. The Earth is a battery, the strata are the plates. God separates and centers all things through the G-lines of still light. He activates all things through the A-positive and B-negative lines of force. The center of our planet consists of a sun. This sun, as the core, rotates in the opposite direction to the moving crust. Between the fiery center of the positively charged core and the negative crust is an insulating, non-conductive strata of fluid glass, obsidian, 600 miles in thickness. All ruptures of the crust are caused by atmospheric conditions. There are several well-defined areas on the surface of the Earth where vortices of magnetic energy are located. In due time, these vortices will bring about the rupture of the crust termed volcanic action. The earthquake faults were brought about by interruptions of the force field around the Earth. Planets without moisture in their atmosphere do not rotate. As the A&B lines of force enter the atmosphere and the crust of the planet, parallel to the equator and at 90 from each other and the axis, they spiral to each pole and arrive before the planet has made one quarter of a turn. Emitting from the poles, they encounter resistance in the form of uninterrupted A&B lines of force, bringing about the phenomena termed aurora. Every planet in the universe moves in curved lines of travel. This is not because they were thrown off by a sun, or central body. If they were, they would not orbit. Anything thrown off of a rotating object will travel in a straight line outward, though on the Earth it may fall because of gravity. The reason planets or electrons orbit around a central body is because they are powered by light energy. Space outside of the Earth's atmosphere is blacker than the blackest ink. Our sun looks like any other bright star, not like a ball of fire. Only the brightest stars can be seen. Pictured in the drawing is what has often been termed the four dark comers. The positive quarter, or spring season of the Earth's orbit, is only predominantly positive relative to the Earth's passing through it. At all other times when light energy is not interrupted by a body or planet, the negative or female lines of force predominate. The old axiom "women first" is applicable throughout the universe. As the Sun crosses the Earth's equator on March 2, it affects a positively charged cyclic predominance in the negative northern hemisphere. In the arc from March 21 to September 23, the Sun tries to attract the Earth to it. This causes the negatively charged Earth to describe the arc of its orbit from March 21 to June 21. This is noted in the drawing as the positive quarter. The reason the Earth proceeds toward the negative lines of light energy in the positive quarter is because the negative lines of light energy have been weakened from passing through the Sun's force field, or positively charged vortex. As the Earth moves from June 21 to September 23, it starts in the downward direction of its elliptical arc. This is called the active quarter. These conditions are being viewed from the northern hemisphere in this explanation. In the southern hemisphere, the active and rest quarters would be opposite from those shown here. As the negatively charged Earth follows its path in the active quarter, it is attracted by the positive Sun on the negative northern hemisphere and by the negative lines of light energy which are acting on the positive southern hemisphere. The positive lines of light energy are repelling on the positively predominant southern hemisphere. The active quarter is summer, our hottest season of the year. This heat is caused by the increase in resistance, set up gradually by the Sun extending its path on the Earth laterally to its northernmost extreme. In the daytime it is hotter because the Sun is farther into the negative northern hemisphere, thereby setting up more resistance in our negatively charged atmosphere and the negatively charged crust of the negative hemisphere. At the midway point between June 21 and September 23, the Earth also reaches its maximum exposure to the resistance of both the positive and negative lines of light energy. This increase in resistance from all three forces at the same time generates more heat. As the Earth proceeds in its path from September 23 to December 21, the days become shorter as the Sun starts changing from the equator into the positively charged southern hemisphere. The positive Sun's effect on the positive hemisphere repels the planet. The negatively charged light lines of energy predominate and repel the planet from their direction of travel, causing it to arc through its orbit to December 21. From December 21 to March 21, the negative predominance of the lines of light energy are again decreasing, and at Z1 in the rest quarter all forces reach balance for an instant. At Z1 in the rest quarter, the field or vortex of the Sun decreases both the positive and negative lines of light energy. The Sun has reached a halfway point between the equator and its southernmost lateral extreme. Then the positive lines of light energy begin to attract the negatively charged planet and the increasing predominance of the negatively charged northern hemisphere.